All right. Hello and happy Monday. We are in week 9. This is our first full week in the New Testament, so that's exciting. We are going to be starting with day 41. We're starting out in Luke today, and then we'll wrap up our week, I think, in Acts, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yes. So, awesome. So we'll finish out the Gospels this week. So Luke 8 through 10 and 22 through 24, Matt.
Yeah, there's a lot in Luke, but the good news is it's more familiar than a lot of the Old Testament. So, you know, as we go through this, we'll do it kind of fast. But there's a couple of things to highlight starting in Luke 8 through 10. First of all, the parable of the sower, right? And we don't actually have to discuss what does it mean because, well, Jesus explains what it means. He explains it to the disciples. So we kind of get the picture of what each of the seed and soil kind of mean. So I guess just one thing I would say about that is, listen, don't be surprised if you know people that seemed to accept the gospel with excitement and then
fizzle out.
That's not new to us. It's not new to your friend or family member that does it. Jesus actually said, hey, that there are four types of people that are going to hear the gospel, and this is one of them. Mm-hmm. They're going to get excited about it, and they're going to fizzle out. Or they're going to get excited about it, but then all of the other things that they have to do are going to make it so that it's irrelevant. I love the fact that he says, look, but the person that believes, there will be fruit. They will demonstrate fruit. Later on in Galatians, we get to read about that fruit of the Spirit and what that's like. But they will show fruit in their lives, and they'll demonstrate that. And then he keeps going, and we see some things that we've seen before, right? Like Jesus calming the storm. Just another way he's demonstrating that he is sovereign over all of creation. Mm-hmm. Him restoring a demon-possessed man and casting out demons. And again, this that there is nobody that's over him or you know beyond him, that he is in charge even of demons. He even raises a girl from the dead, right? In Luke, later in Luke 8, he raises a girl from the dead. So think about this. In the course of Luke 8, here's what we find out about Jesus. Nature responds to him. He is mm-hmm. God of nature, right? Demons, right? God of these things that have rejected him. Like he still has authority over them. And then even he has authority over death. Right, he tells this girl to wake up, and that she's not really dead; she's sleeping, and she wakes, and so we get this picture, and then he feeds 5,000 when we get to chapter 9, and there's all of this great things that are happening. But what I love is that Jesus is also in this; he's not just flexing his ministry muscle. Because he's doing some really awesome things. It would be easy for him just to kind of focus on himself. But he's always giving glory to the Father. Mm-hmm. And even in chapter 9, what's the thing he does? He takes the 12 and he sends them out. He's like, look, this isn't about me, mm-hmm. right? This is about the Father. So you go do these works. These works that I've been doing, you go do them. And so they do. They go out and they share and they teach and they have success in that. And so it's good. And we keep going. And then I do want to drill down and focus on this one thing. There's a lot in here about, again, him doing miracles and driving out demons. But in chapter 9, verse 57, he specifically is talking about what it costs to follow him. And there are a couple of different people that say, Jesus, we want to follow you. And basically what Jesus says is, stop and think about what you're asking. Because following me is not easy. Mm-hmm. Following me is difficult. You know, he talks about foxes have holes and birds have nests, but the Son of Man doesn't have anywhere to lay his head. And basically saying, look, man, like we're not of this world. This isn't our place. We don't live here. We work here. And so if you want to be mine, you got to know that, right? And if you're wanting to follow me, but longing for this thing that you left behind. Nobody that puts their hand to the plow and looks back is fit, mm-hmm. right? Because you got to let all that go.
Yep, or he'll turn you into a pillar of salt.
Sure, we're going to go back to Lot. But like there's this idea that counting Jesus has a cost to it. Mm-hmm. And we must count up the cost. And so I just love the picture that he does. And then we read this weird part in chapter 10 about all the woes. Woe to you, this place, and woe to you, and whoever listens to you listens to me, and whoever rejects you rejects me. And so Jesus is basically just transferring his authority that comes from God to his followers. He's saying, look, you're going to do, and he says it later, you'll do greater things than I mm-hmm. when you're doing these things in my name. And so there's this whole point. And so 8 through 10, great picture of who Jesus is and a great picture of him transferring that to his followers so that they can be out doing the same work. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the last part, the 22 through 24. There's some interesting things that happen here. Obviously, this wraps up the book. And so we talk about the crucifixion there, mm-hmm. Judas betraying Jesus, and a lot of that and how it all plays together. But there's a couple of things to point out. One, in the Last Supper, right? I think, there's some just matter-of-fact things that we gloss over. Like, I love this whole thing about, go figure out where we're going to have dinner. And they're like, where are we going to celebrate the Passover? He's like, well, here's how it'll work. You'll go into town. There'll be a man. He'll do this. You'll do this. And then just tell him, we're going to come hang out at your, in your house tonight. And we're going to have the Passover celebration. And it just happens exactly the way Jesus says it will. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it just happens. Mm-hmm. I think that's just a fun little thing. And what I love is that he says to them, knowing he's about to die, I love this in verse 19 or verse 15. I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. And we think about this is that Jesus is just teaching them a lesson, but listen to what he says next, right? Because this thing, it gets awfully personal for him, because I will not eat it again until it finds fulfillment in the kingdom of God. Like this is a major milestone mm-hmm. moment for Jesus. He's like, I am going to eat this Passover with you. And what he's really saying is this Passover that you've been celebrating for all of the history of the Israelite nation, this Passover that you're supposed to celebrate, it's always been about me. It's always been pointing to me. It's always been telling the story of what's going to happen with me. And so now it's going to be fulfilled in the kingdom. And so when he says, I have eagerly desired to eat this with you, mm-hmm. there's part of me that thinks, I wonder if he's been eagerly desiring to eat this with them since the fall. Mm-hmm. Right? Because this is not a surprise to him. He right. knows this is happening. And all of earth has been groaning for this moment, for salvation to come. And so I think he's like, mm-hmm. I've been waiting for this, not just for the last 3 years we've been doing ministry together, right. but I've been waiting for this. I love that. And this picture of what it means to serve one another and what it means to love one another. And then, again, the story we know well. Peter disowns Jesus. Jesus is put on trial. He's silent before his accusers, right? He doesn't fight with them. He doesn't argue. Why? Because he knows. Mm-hmm. He's been eagerly waiting mm-hmm. for these moments. But keep going. My favorite. In Luke 24. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much. Yeah, we're getting there. But in Luke 24, I love what happens on the road to Emmaus. Mm-hmm. I love this because it actually tells us something. One, Jesus references the Old Testament all the time. So we know that Jesus knows his Old Testament. We know he loves it. But what we read on this road to Emmaus is that these followers of his, they're not part of the 12, but they are followers. They probably were among the 72 that Jesus sent out way back in Luke, 12 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And so they know him, but they don't recognize him. He keeps them from recognizing him. And he goes out of his way to start with the books of Moses and to explain all through the prophets why everything that happened to him was predicted to have happened, was called, you know, in prophecy that these things were going to happen. And he explains why it has to happen that way and basically opens up the Jewish scriptures to help them understand how he is the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of God. And it's this great picture. And I, you know, for anybody that thinks the Old Testament isn't relevant, well, Jesus right here shows us that it absolutely is relevant, that it all points to him and that how he would suffer and die and conquer death and rise from the grave and take our sin onto himself and all of that. And so it's just such a great, beautiful picture. And I love it. It's one of my favorite chapters.